Building a successful company is hard enough, but growing during political strife is a special challenge. Despite cultural and political pressures in the Middle East, my guest today, Tamer Nasser, has expanded his family's business into a major player in oil and textiles. This is YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. I'm Kevin Daum, and each week I bring you insights from the world's top executives of YPO, all made possible with grants from Gazelle's Growth Institute, www.growthinstitute.com. YPO member Tamer Nasser is the managing director and CEO of Setcor Petroleum Services. Although the Setcor Group was incorporated formally in 1972 by Tamer's grandfather, it actually has roots dating back to the 19th century as a leather tannery. The company was one of Egypt's first modern industrial cornerstones. It survived world wars, the Great Depression, and numerous political upheavals in the region. At one time, Setcor was incredibly diversified in areas as broad as ice cream, beverages, heavy equipment, and building materials. Since taking over in 1999, Tamer has focused the products towards textiles and oil field services. He has expanded their geography to include the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq. Tamer, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tamer, you have a longtime family business from Egypt.
Yes.
And going back several generations, I mean, you've seen some dramatic political change over the years. This business has been in everything from oil and gas, textiles, as and I understand it, one of the largest providers of ice cream, which I'm thinking if I'm opening an ice cream business, I'm opening it in the desert. I just think that's a perfect, perfect thing.
Yes, yes. So really, the business has been around since sometime in the 19th century. You don't really know for sure when it got started, but it was a leather tannery that started in Alexandria. And it was nationalized by President Gamal Abdel Nasser in 1963, so it was confiscated by the government. And at that time, my grandfather was running it. And he then worked for the government because there was no private sector for a few years in Egypt. And when President Sadat came in the early 70s, he was one of the first people to start a private business again.
That's an interesting point to make, which is there were no private businesses, so you're running it for the government. How did your grandfather feel about that?
So he passed away a few years ago, but he was very much a private sector person. He believed very much in the role of the private sector and believed the role of the government should really just be to, you know, regulate and so on. So he was one of the first people to set up a private business in Egypt after President Sadat came to power. You know, one of the first things he did was trading commodities, and then he made a little bit of money from there, and he invested in Egypt's first ice cream factory. Like you said, it made a lot of sense to make ice cream in a country like Egypt. And then he branched out in several other industries over the years and actually did well in these different businesses. So from steel to fruit juice, a bunch of different things. And at that time, the economy was liberalizing, and he had the chance to be sort of the first in all of these things. And there were tremendous opportunities at that time.
Now, how did the family transfer through on generations? The average family business does not last more than 60 years. It doesn't generally last more than the second generation. You're in the third generation.
Yes.
Now, how did that transfer of power work?
So my grandfather, he had two daughters, my mother and my aunt. And when my brother and I grew up in the States and when we graduated from college, we moved back to Egypt. He asked us to come back and join the family business, which we did with great pleasure. And we had the amazing opportunity to learn from him, really, and learn from his experience and learn his values and all of that.
How many employees were in the company at the time?
Well, at that time, we were probably about 600-700. Today, we're about 1,000.
How hard was that for you to go from being a college student to all of a sudden managing hundreds of employees?
It was very hard. As a matter of fact, I went to school in Santa Barbara, California. So the move from Santa Barbara to Cairo was very interesting, to say the least. Yeah, it took some time. And also, we hadn't been living in Egypt for very long.
What was your biggest challenge when you moved to Cairo?
Well, I think just figuring out the way things are done. So we had the challenge of learning about business, which, you know, we were early 20s at that time, so we had very little experience. But also learning about, you know, how businesses transacted in Egypt and the Middle East. So we had two things to learn at the same time, which was quite a lot.
Still today, if you had to take away one incredibly powerful lesson, what's the one that sticks in your mind?
Well, being patient. I think if you're going to do business in this part of the world, I think patience is absolutely key. And also getting understanding that things move at a very different pace here.
It's an interesting challenge for a visionary leader. It's easy to say, be patient, but at the same time, if you're too patient, you don't drive anything forward.
Well, you still have to persevere, and I'd say that's a third thing you've got to be able to do in this part of the world. But you have to realize that these are emerging economies. There are a lot of changes that are happening that have always been happening over the last 15, 20 years. And yet there are also many opportunities. And things happen at a very different pace than they do in California or the West or in Europe. And I think getting that understanding is important because the opportunities, if you're able to be patient and also persevere, can be tremendous.
Now, you and your brother run different parts of the business now. He runs the textiles, as I understand
That's correct.
And you've now gone into oil and gas,
yes,
which is seeing some ups and downs.
Sure. More downs than ups.
More downs than ups. Yeah. Do you feel like maybe you should have made the other choice?
Yeah, no kidding, right.
But Egypt's gone through a very rough time in the last several years. Tell me about how the revolution had an impact and where does it stand for you today?
So tremendous, I think, social and political changes in Egypt. Obviously, with everything that happened in Tahrir Square in 2011, I mean, they're just huge changes. And I think that, you know, the country overall has been struggling a little bit over the past few years. But there are also a lot of opportunities coming up as well. For us, for myself, I felt since I was in the oil and gas business, and we're doing business in other countries outside of Egypt, like Saudi Arabia, for example, and here in the UAE, we felt that being based in Dubai would offer some good opportunities to push the business in the region a bit more. So we actually moved here a few years ago to do just that. We have employees in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia, and here in the UAE as well.
With all the employees that you had in Egypt, I mean, here you're in the middle of a revolution, which almost by its very nature, right, pits the people on the bottom against the people on the top. How did you manage that tumultuous time with your employees?
You know, we got really lucky. So we did have some threats of strikes because strikes were just breaking out left, right, and center all over the place, you know, and we had to deal with a little bit of that. But we, you know, because these people have been employees of ours for so many years, we had a lot of relationships and we were able to leverage those relationships to calm things down and sort of keep things moving forward. But it was a very, very challenging time. I mean, the labor issue was huge.
Looking back on it, is there any specific steps that you took that you think made all the difference?
We spent an awful lot of time talking to them and explaining to them what was going on and, you know, what we could do and we couldn't do. And I think this conversation, the dialogue, was absolutely key. You know, we've seen other cases where there was an absence of dialogue and things broke down very, very quickly.
You're very active in YPO. You're on the Regional Chairs Council. You actually chair 15 strongest of the strong of YPOers of these leaders. You are truly leading leaders.
Yes.
Oh, please tell us some of those challenges.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, we're so blessed to be in this organization, and it's really made up of wonderful servant leaders and wonderful member volunteers. When you get into leadership in this organization, you have an amazing opportunity to learn about servant leadership, and we don't have any capital structures to get what we want. We can't give orders, right? So everything has to be done by persuasion, by listening, by understanding the other point of view and all that. And I think in that are some incredibly valuable skills that I don't really think you can learn anywhere else. And you can apply these skills in your life, in your business, in your family life, everywhere else, which is just amazing.
If you were to offer up two or three very specific things to work on for someone out there who's thinking about taking on the chairman of a board, whether it be a nonprofit or a community board, what would you tell them?
Well, you know, I think leading by example is absolutely huge. And leading by doing and not just by talking is absolutely huge. And honestly, listening. I mean, I have learned the value of listening big time in YPO, you know, to listen to others and understand the different point of view and take into account other perspectives.
Okay, Tamer, it's time for our rapid questions. Here we go. What is your favorite question to ask when you meet someone new?
Tell me about yourself.
Name three of your personal core values.
Integrity, being grateful, and humility.
Who has had the greatest impact on you as a leader?
My grandfather.
What is your favorite business book?
From Good to Great.
What are you reading right now?
Multipliers by Liz Wiseman.
What is the one leadership trait that brings success?
Humility.
What is the one leadership trait that kills success?
Not being able to listen.
Name one daily behavior that will help a leader grow.
Exercise.
Name one trait that makes an employee valuable.
Loyalty.
What's your strangest daily habit?
Playing the drums, but not on a drum set, like whatever I can find.
Children.
Tapping. Children, you name it, yeah.
What's the best way to show employees appreciation?
Picking up the phone and telling them that you appreciate them.
Well, I'm going to tell you directly if that's okay. I certainly appreciate you coming on the show today, Tamer.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to Gazelle's Growth Institute for underwriting this program. Learn more at growthinstitute.com. Join me next Tuesday when I'll be interviewing YPO member Pradeep Chaleo, chairman and managing director of the natural skincare company that bears his name, Chaleo. He'll tell me how natural soap can keep your conscience clean as well as your skin. I'm Kevin Daum, and you're listening to the YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. To learn more about YPO, please visit www.ypo.org.